Gorgeous Food and Drink on Radio Gorgeous. Today I'm here with Ali Ray, who loves the outdoors and food and is a champion of camping in all its shapes and forms. She loves discovering the best locally sourced food and deciding where she's going to pitch up when she camps. Hi Ali, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you very much, good to be here.
So I'm here with my book on my lap and it's called Pitch Up and Eat Local, Where to Camp, Where to Eat and How to Cook. Is this the first book of its kind?
I think so. I think there's lots of camp recipe books on the market and there's lots of guides to campsites, but obviously a large part of camping is what you cook and also finding your good food. And so I thought that there wasn't anything on the market that showed you a good idea, like these are great places to camp, and when you get there, where do you want to go and stock up on your food, or where do you want to go, great little local cafe, great little restaurant, or a good pub that serves produce from that area.
That's a brilliant idea. So, Ali, which came first, your passion for camping or food?
Definitely camping.
Oh, yeah. Tell us your camping story.
Well, I didn't actually get into it until quite late in life.
It's become fashionable recently.
Well, yeah, I'd like to think it was before it was fashionable. But I used to work in television and I had a very busy job and did the classic, I need to take a year out and, you know, go away and think about life. So I went to Australia. And on the second day there, I bought a camper van, which is my yellow camper van on the front of the book.
It's the same one?
It's the same one, yeah.
Bought it from Australia?
Yeah, so that's Custard. And I lived in it for a year. And I travelled the whole circumference of Australia. I went out back and picked up a man. That sounds bad. But he's now my husband. Wow. And so the two of us travelled around for a year. And neither of us could cook. And it was a real case of do or die, and so I learned to cook on a barbecue outside, and because we had loads of time, we had time to think about what we quite fancied to eat, or time to wander around and find the market or the fishmongers or something, and did have the luxury of time over that year to get to know about food, teach myself how to prepare it, and cook outside in the most amazing places, from somewhere with like a beach view. I remember we camped in Byron Bay and my barbecue was set up overlooking the beach and I did the classic throw shrimps on the barbie. And then, you know, cooked a lot of seafood and cooked in, I remember once being in a forest in Australia. It was only us and one other camper van in there. And we'd made a fire and a guy came over and said, do you fancy a chook? There were two for one in the shop and I've got one. Do you want one? And I...
Fancy a what?
Chook, as in a chicken. Australia, yeah.
Fancy a chook.
Yeah. And then I sort of put a, you know, stick through it and rotisseried it over the fire. So I kind of got a real passion for it there. So when we came home,
Was he English? Just need to inquire about him.
Oh, yes. Okay. He's English. He's a Geordie.
Okay.
And when came home...
Yeah. How did you bring Custard back?
On a ship. Because we'd looked into excess baggage to bring back things because we'd got wetsuits and surfboards and we'd kind of lived that life for a year. And I was quite attached to all my camp cooking gear. Yeah, I'd want to have this at home. And we looked into excess baggage on a flight and it was extortionate. And then we looked into how much would it be to put the van on a container ship and stuff it full of things. And it was cheaper. So
how
it cost the equivalent of £1,000.
That's brilliant.
And when you think about how much camp... Yes. And our van cost us £2,000, yes. The equivalent over there. So we ended up with our beloved Custard back in this country. And it's since been our wedding car. And we've had to have the whole inside ripped out to put two seats in because we've since had children. And so it's over the years, the van has adapted with me. But, I now basically work to keep the thing on the road. It's about 28 years old.
RadioGorgeous.com. Fabulous. So you ride back with a Custard and a man.
Yeah, Yeah. And then we decided that what's crazy is most of us don't know our own country particularly well. And we've enjoyed that
As soon as we get some time off, we go the sun.
Exactly. And we had decided when we were over there that when we came home, we would treat our country with the same eyes. We'd treat it like tourists. And it's exactly, I suppose that's what I've done. We arrived back in 2003. And since then, I have travelled around and camped across Britain. And that whole kind of cooking thing has just developed. And now it's my job. And I write a column for the Camping and Caravanning Club magazine called Eat Local. And each month I go and either meet a producer or I'll go and find a brilliant pub who kind of really support local producers. And, you know, it's kind of gone from there.
What's cool is you've made a career out of your passion.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose also it fitted with being a woman and having children and thinking, how can I combine something I'm good at, something I love, and also that I can involve my children in some way. And that's really worked because, in fact, I was only camping this weekend and my kids were sat on this campsite and one leant back and said, "Oh, Mummy, never change your job because we get to do fun things." And I thought, yeah, you know, yeah, it's hard work for me because I'm trying to do it all and take photos and do research whilst they're having a brilliant time. But that kind of worked for us as a family. So they're now, you know, a little bit older, but their whole lives, they've, as soon as Custard comes out the garage, their little eyes light up and, yeah, it's like, wait, here we go again.
So what is so special about eating and cooking outdoors? I mean, you talk about it with passion, but why is it different?
I think a couple of reasons. I was thinking about this at the weekend while I was cooking. What was I cooking the weekend? I cooked some lamb chops on the barbecue and there was birdsong and I was just generally being nosy and watching the world go by. I could see my kids playing on the little play park on this campsite and I think you just feel more relaxed, which goes into the other reason, which is all the rules are off. In a kitchen, you know, it's all about timing, whizzing gizmos, am I going to get this right? Whereas on a campsite, it's all about kind of a bit bish bash bosh. You can experiment a bit more. I think you just take the pressure off a little bit. And yeah, I think there's a real, for me, there's always been a connection between where I am and what I'm cooking. Because if you're standing on a campsite and you're looking around, or maybe you've got an orchard next door, say you're camping in the southwest in Somerset, there's an orchard. And, you know, there's like the farmer keeps pigs in the orchard and you're maybe cooking something that you've brought from that person's farm shop. It's all about you kind of keeping all those things going. If you don't buy local apples, then that farmer's never going to keep that orchard going and you'll never be able to camp next to an orchard. So you're kind of doing your bit. As much as the food is fantastic, you're also doing your bit to sustain all the things that you like about where you camp, I suppose.
So you went all the way, if you look, it was a map in this book.
Yes.
And it looks like you went all the way from Cornwall to west of Scotland.
Yes, I did. Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, the book is a sort of a culmination of, say, 6 years of me writing that column. On top of that, I then did specific trips for the book. So I did a lovely trip through East Anglia and got to know quite a lot of Norfolk and Suffolk. I met a black turkey farmer, as in the turkeys are black. It's a very traditional Norfolk breed, and I learned a lot about them. And things like, you know, I met a farmer who was having to diversify in the early 90s when all the, you know, everything was going a bit wrong for farming, and some people ended up diversifying by making their own cheese on site or opening B&Bs. And this guy in Norfolk thought, well, you know, we're brilliant at growing barley with these large expanses of flat, fertile fields. Barley's used in making beer. And he knew there were lots of little microbrewers around, people just making it in their garage. And he, you know, he tasted some of it, thought it was fantastic. So he came up with the idea of building a shop, a beer shop, right in the middle of a field. And he went to all the microbrewers and said, "I will sell your beer in this shop," because they needed an outlet, "on the condition that you buy your malted barley from me." And it works. And so when I went to meet him, there's this beautiful shop, beautiful flagstone floors, and it's like a gallery, because all the, you know, the craft ales have all these beautiful pictures on them. And as I was there, a guy came in, delivered his sort of, you know, a little crate of bottles, reversed it round the back, and then you saw him getting all his barley ready to go take it back. And, you know, and it's those kind of things that, that's what we need to keep going in our country for our kind of our food, I suppose, our food economy to keep going, and plus all the countryside to keep going as we like it. So, yeah, it's, I learned about that area through meeting that person. And I suppose that's part of what the book is trying to encourage people to get out and go to those kind of places, go to that real ale shop, and you will, you know, you'll have an experience that you remember about Norfolk rather than nip into the supermarket before you arrive at your campsite.
Yeah, what's great is about the book is that you advise. Now let's just talk about camping, because guess what? I'm a reluctant camper. I'm scared of being woken up at dawn and been cold all the time and uncomfortable. You say there's all sorts of different sorts of camping. Can you tell me what sorts there are?
I think I could, that's it. I think I can match people to their suitable camping.
Okay, you've only met me for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I already know that you would feel at home in a place called Jolly Days Camping in York, or near York. And this is, you can choose from a woodcutter's tent or a sort of a luxury safari lodge, and they have beautiful cotton sheets, and you might even have a roll-top bath in your... And you can have... So you could get into the sort of outdoorsy life and you'll have your own fire pitch outside, but the lady there will deliver a hamper of breakfast goods and meats for you to, you know, to have, try a little bit of cooking over your campfire. Or she will say, deliver you a pot of, she does potted pheasant and potted beef, and there, you know, for your arrival, she'll deliver you your pot and you just heat it up over your campfire. Oh. So there's that. Obviously, I am a campervan camper.
Yeah, what does campervan mean? You can turn up at campsites and you attach.
Mm-hmm. So I can. Yeah. I do have electric in my camper van, although it's very old. So there are lots of campsites that you have electric hookup.
Yeah.
So I would book beforehand, arrive there. I've got a plug from one end, you know, and I plug it into your little electric stand at the back of your pitch, and then I've got lighting, and I have a fridge, you know, and I've got a little gas stove in there anyway. You can have electric if you're in a tent as well. Most tents are cavernous these days, family tents. So, you know, I mean, there are also...
Can you go to... Like, that's a place that's already set up, isn't it? So you don't have to take any equipment.
So the ones that I was saying to you, you don't have to. So at the weekend, because my camper van is in the Menders at the moment, I was in... So the Camping and Caravan Club have sites all over the country, and they all have electrics, and you know with their sites that the toilet block's pristine, and you know there's someone to go wash your kids if they're really muddy, and you know it's there's a laundry, and there's all the mod cons are there for you to use. I was in what they've got a new thing called Ready Tents, which are pre-erected kind of big safari tents. You just take your own bedding, but it's got their own little kitchen. Anything you need is there already. So
where was that?
So that was in Canterbury. So I did a sort of went to Canterbury for the day. Whitstable had a real kind of city break for me.
Whitstable.
It was absolutely I did that. Went and had some oysters. It was brilliant. And for me, it's a very different type of camping because obviously we tend to get there. We've got a trailer, and then we have what we call a drive away awning. So my kids sleep in the van. We have a big tent that zips onto the side of the van. So when you open the door, they then step down into this big tent area. My husband and I sleep there. But it's a lot of unpacking and packing. Whereas this weekend...
Ah.
So I think it would have cost the equivalent of about 200 quid for 3 nights. And that was on a bank holiday weekend. So that's probably most expensive.
That is really good.
And
value.
And it was just so easy. Literally, I mean, they've got little heaters there, so you won't get cold.
Thanks for thinking of that.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, sort of clothing rails and things, so it's, you know, it's all really sorted out for you. But there's so many, some people don't think that's camping.
Now, yeah, what about people who literally like a tap in a field?
And that's it. And in the book, that I've made sure, with every place I've picked 3 campsites, and I try to do one that's a place with, a tap in a field, another one that's sort of mid-range that, you know, will have electric hookup and has comforts like a laundry block.
Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women. RadioGorgeous.com.
There is a magic about camping in whatever way you do it. And I just had the most amazing weekend again. It was my first camping of the season, and it completely reminded me of what was so lovely about it. And it does make you calmer, I think, because you have to think about simple things like, where am I going to take this washing up now? And I don't stuff it in a dishwasher. I wander across and I'll stand outside and have my hands in warm water. And I'm at a sink and I'm watching people walk their dog, and everything just kind of chills out a little bit.
Oh, I'm already feeling calmer, Ali.
I think I need to take you camping.
Yeah, definitely. So let's just go through, gosh, I know it's really hard to say favourite recipe. Tell me a recipe which is your favourite at the moment, because I'm like that. I always go through phases. We've got the book here.
No, let's have a look.
And
I mean,
you can
there's
tell
lots
me.
Of things I've loved cooking. I suppose that, and I've made a real effort to make things that are interesting but not difficult. Because I know there's and most people do, and I accept this, get to the campsite, shove a few sausages on the barbecue. But I think once you've got that over and done with, you know, there are so many other options.
Maybe if we look at an area, you can say a food.
Yes.
What area was, you know, just sticks out in your mind?
Scotland.
Ah.
Really, really enjoyed Scotland. So I got into black pudding in Scotland. So I've done, in the book, I've got campers, sort of black pudding breakfast rosties, which are really simple, and just slices of black pudding that I'd sort of fried, and then I grated potato. I'm a big fan of the grater on a campsite, because you can make breadcrumbs with your grater, all kinds of things, another story. And then, so you literally, you grate your potato, mix a little bit of egg into it, and then you put... make a patty. I'm doing it with my hands now. Yeah. No, this is radio. So you make a patty of grated potato with your egg and put it as if you're making a burger. Put your black pudding, fried black pudding on, and then put another patty on top. So it's almost like you've hidden your black pudding slice in that. And then you fry that and then put poached egg on the top. And that's just lovely, filling campers breakfast. And, you know, part of going around and realising that every butcher in Scotland almost has their black pudding as their calling card. They're all different. Some are really cinnamony, some are really spicy and peppery. And yeah, so that was great in Scotland. And also the seafood, obviously. West coast of Scotland was fantastic. And I got into a lot of, I tasted hot smoked scallops, which is probably my favourite taste out of this whole thing.
Smoked, but
yeah,
you
so they're cooked.
The
what I did is I made a risotto with them. But even just eating little slices of this sort of smoked it was cooked over hot smoke, so that cooked it already, so you could, oh god, it was amazing, absolutely amazing. So I did that with like a risotto blanco, just really plain risotto, and then put that on the tops. But you could do that with smoked salmon, just get smoky feeling flavors. And a vegetarian one I make a lot is stuffed mushrooms. So in the book I did that with Stilton. So use portobello mushrooms, so, and take the stalks out. So effectively, the mushrooms become like the burger buns. And then you make a stuffing, really quick stuffing, in a bowl. So grate a couple of slices of white bread. That gives you your breadcrumbs. Crumble up some Stilton. Maybe snip a few spring onions in it. Squidge of lemon juice and a little bit of oil. And then you can make that into a little ball that you put in the middle of the two mushroom buns, as I call them, and they look huge when you put them on the barbecue. And put them on, if you've got a lid on your barbecue, even better, and leave it for about 8 minutes, and that will slowly cook down, and you can sort of serve it whole like that, or slice it, and they come in. God. Yeah, so that's a
terrible
good one.
Thing, I'm meeting you at lunchtime.
I know, actually, yeah. I'd actually have my barbecue watering in the studio, shouldn't I?
What about actually being in Scotland in nature? I mean,
stunning. Yeah, that was amazing. I had a real treat one day. I went to around Aviemore, there's an estate called the Rothiemurchus Estate, and it's a family, I think, who've had it for 600-700 years. And you know, the thing with sort of Highland estates at the moment, a lot of them are obviously being bought up by people who have, you know, a lot of money and use them as a playground as opposed to managing the estates properly. And I know that's a little bit of a problem in Scotland at the moment. And it was really nice to meet a family who absolutely devoted to keeping that landscape going and working for itself, but working for the community as well. And they're really trying to attract traditional skills back into the local community, so that when they're no longer around, this place can keep going. And I had this most hilarious day out with the laird's wife, who took me at 100 miles an hour, it felt like, in a battered old Land Rover, just herring around the estate and showing me, you know, all the deer and the Highland cows. And then she took me back, that there's a lovely, they've got an amazing campsite, and you can pitch your tent in amongst the trees right next to a beautiful little sort of babbling brook. And then just up the road, there's her farm shop where you can get like velvet venison steaks. They're just amazing. Oh. Or there's a little cafe nearby that, you know, serves all the stuff from their estate. And that, having spent the day with her, getting to know the landscape and getting to know how they farm the land, and, you know, all the things that go into, you know, keeping that estate going, that felt, it almost completed the circle for me. So, you know, being able to then at the end of the day go and get some meat from the farm shop, and I've understood what the effort has gone into, you know, looking after those animals properly and getting it there to my plate. And that was beautiful. Also, yeah, it was a good experience generally.
And that's really what your book's all about.
Definitely.
It's so wonderful that you came onto Radio Gorgeous today. So Pitch Up and Eat Local, Where to Camp, What to Eat and How to Cook is published by the AA and written by Ali Ray. Thanks, Ali. I think he might have changed my mind.
I hope to see you camping soon.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production 2015, produced and presented by Josephine Pembroke, edited by Anna Palinkas.